This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Robin Martinez, who is coordinating legal defense efforts for the Sacred Stone Encampment in North Dakota, brings us up to speed on the Dakota Access Pipeline and the resistance against it. Arlene Taylor and Jane Carroll also join us to talk about their recent supply run from Kansas City up to North Dakota. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. DeSmogBlog.com reports last Friday afternoon brought a roller coaster of emotions for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and supporters in the battle to stop construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline near the tribe's North Dakota reservation. Minutes after U.S. District Judge James Boasberg issued a 58-page ruling Friday denying the tribe's request for a temporary injunction to halt construction, the Department of Justice, the Department of the Army, and the Department of the Interior issued a joint statement to, quote, cease to authorize construction, end quote, on federally controlled lands, essentially nullifying the court's action. The Corps of Engineers can block construction on its land, which does stop the contested Missouri River crossing, at least for now. But the federal government can't stop energy transfer from proceeding to construct the Dakota Access Pipeline on private land, which is why it asked DAPL to voluntarily halt construction there. It is not certain that the company will voluntarily agree to stop construction in the 20-mile zone on either side of Lake Oahe. If it continues, some North American cultural and archaeological sites could still face the risk of damage or deconstruction. For now, the tribe and their supporters are treating the joint agency statement as a victory. TheGuardian.com reports North Dakota police have issued an arrest warrant for the Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman, who has been reporting on the Native American protests against an oil pipeline, accusing her of entering private property to conduct interviews. The charges have raised concerns about possible free speech violations and press intimidation since the Morton County Sheriff's Office accused the award-winning broadcast journalist after Democracy Now! Filmed security guards working for the Dakota Access Pipeline using dogs and pepper spray on the protesters. Quote, this is an unacceptable violation of freedom of press, end quote, Goodman said in a statement after police accused her of criminal trespass and misdemeanor offense. Goodman's dispatch on the use of dogs quickly spread online and was viewed more than 13 million times on the news program's Facebook page. Many outlets rebroadcast the footage, including CBS, NBC, NPR, and CNN, according to Democracy Now! Earthquake.usgs.gov reports, the September 3rd, 2016 magnitude 5.8 Oklahoma earthquake occurred as the result of shallow strike slip faulting about 15 kilometers northwest of the town of Pawnee. The earthquake occurred within the interior of the North America plate, far from any plate boundaries. The preliminary focal mechanism solution for the earthquake indicates rupture occurred on either a left lateral fault striking east-southeast or on a right lateral fault striking north-northeast. The main shock location aligns with a major regional southwest-northeast trending fault. In general, it is very difficult to correlate earthquakes to specific faults in the region, and identification of the fault responsible for this event will require further study and fieldwork. Locations across the central and eastern United States have been experiencing a rapid increase in the number of induced earthquakes over the past 7 years. Since 2009, rates in some areas, such as Oklahoma, have increased by more than an order of magnitude. Scientific studies have linked the majority of this increased activity to wastewater injection and deep disposal wells in several locations. However, other mechanisms, such as fluid withdrawal, enhanced oil recovery, or hydraulic fracturing processes, can also result in induced earthquakes. And finally, EcoWatch.com reports, the Obama administration unveiled the National Offshore Wind Strategy aimed at driving major investment in wind farms along the U.S. coastline. The plan envisions 86 gigawatts of electricity generated by offshore wind by 2050, which could reduce U.S. emissions by 1.8%, support approximately 160,000 jobs, and power 23 million homes. America's first 30-megawatt wind farm off of Rhode Island is expected to begin operating in early November. At this time, I would like to call Mike Murphy.
Thank you very much. One other thing I'd like to add. Did you say something about the people arrested in Iowa?
I did not.
Oh, yeah. So apparently 19 people were arrested in Iowa protesting the pipeline in Iowa. KKFI is airing a program on Thursday at noon on Sprouts about the Iowa end of the pipeline protest. But of course, this was done before this, these 19 arrests. I mean, we can look up that up and find out more about that. Also, while I'm on the subject, tomorrow morning's Law and Disorder is about legal support for the Dakota Access Pipeline resistance. And that features, Robin, you were asking me this, Attorney Jeff Haas is of the National Lawyers Guild, is one of the folks that will be on that program tomorrow. And Robin, I'm talking to Robin before I have introduced him. That's Robin Martinez. Robin, interest of full disclosure, is KKFI's attorney. And is that right?
That is right, Mike. Right? And thanks for having me on the show tonight. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that that Jeff Haas was going to be on Law and Disorder tomorrow. He's been one of the members of our legal team who's been up in North Dakota on site working, you know, with a number of other members of the National Lawyers Guild to try to help provide some legal support for the protectors of the water there. And it's been a monumental effort. So I'm glad that Jeff is going to be able to give his account of what's been going on tomorrow as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's tomorrow morning between 9 and 10, right after Democracy Now! And, of course, Democracy Now! Has been covering this issue, to the point of getting arrested. And you might always want to check out Democracy Now! So in the studio here are Arlene Taylor, Jane Carroll, and Robin Martinez. Arlene and Jane made a trip up to encampment where the main protest is against. We're talking about Dakota Access Pipeline, and we're going to find out a little about what inspired them and what the trip was like, and they're going to tell us firsthand about their trip up there. Also, you might want to check our website to hear Rhonda Lavaldo's account. She was up there, so you'd like to check out Native Spirit from September 4th, and. Also, you might want to check out Eco Radio KC's show from last week, had the Kansas City rally. And so by way of, like, I'm trying to put this in a way for someone who might not know about this and maybe someone who's tuning in for KKFI for the first time, because it has been covered on KKFI. But so what's the issue here? Like, a lot of natives started gathering several months ago in reaction to this, and what is the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Well, let me give you a little bit of background on that. Please. to take a step back. I mean, Dakota Access is really, it is a monstrosity of a pipeline. It runs from, or it's they're planning on running it from North Dakota through South Dakota, Iowa, and then into Illinois. The whole point of the pipeline, and it's about a $3.8 billion project.
Wow.
That was put together by a company out of Dallas called Energy Transfer Partners. There are a number of companies that are involved in this. I think Phillips 66 is part of the deal, Sunoco, and even Enbridge, which is another big Canadian pipeline company, has an interest in it. And, of course, everybody and their brother, from Bank of America to U.S. Bank to Goldman Sachs, is providing financing for this thing. And the whole pipeline is all about delivering oil that's being fracked from the Bakken Shale up in North Dakota to refineries in Patoka, Illinois. And, you know, it's a big pipeline. It's slated to carry about 500,000 barrels of crude oil per day, which is about half of the entire capacity of the Bakken Shale. So it's not a small project.
Wow.
It's huge, and I mean it's got a lot of oil in terms of throughput.
And so, as we mentioned a little while ago, there are protests in Iowa, but in North Dakota, it's a big deal for a lot of reasons. There's some, like, culturally sensitive areas there, and then it's also the fact that it's going under the Missouri River, which is an environmental concern. Is that?
It's a real environmental concern, and it's an environmental justice concern too. One of the things that, you know, that Energy Transfer Partners had to do was get permission from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to run under the Missouri River. And they're planning on cutting under the Missouri River in two places. One's a little further north, and then the big one that the tribes are protesting right now is a crossing that is right off of the Standing Rock Reservation. And it's in an area that was actually taken and flooded by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to create Lake Oahe back in the 1940s, 1950s. It was originally the tribe's land, and like so often happens with the tribes, the land was just simply appropriated and flooded to create this lake. But what was interesting about the way this particular river crossing was permitted was originally it was slated to run across the Missouri River, or underneath it, just upstream of the water intakes of the city of Bismarck, which is the state capital and is virtually an all-white community.
Yeah.
But apparently, because of concerns about what a pipeline breach might do to the city of Bismarck's water supply, and a couple of other factors that were in terms of the routing and what property it went through, they decided to go ahead and just shift it a little further south, just upstream from the tribe, Standing Rock Tribe's water intakes. That, in and of itself is just it's a tremendous environmental justice issue that occurs right there. Apparently clean waters, is great for the folks of Bismarck, but it doesn't matter what happens to the tribe.
Right, exactly, yeah. So tell us, there's a lot that has happened in the last several weeks. You want to maybe go, can you give us a brief timeline of, maybe starting, the end of August or something?
Well, I'll actually even go back further than that. And, the Sacred Stone Camp that was set up there, it was actually originated and set up by a number of the youth of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And they organized it. It was largely a youth movement of kids within the tribe that were very interested in making sure that they had clean water. It was an issue for them. And, part of what they also did was they had a group of young adults and teenagers who actually ran in a relay to deliver a petition to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the federal government. They ran a relay on foot all the way from North Dakota to Washington, D.C. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And, that was part of the whole issue that they had. We want you to respect our water. And all of that was tied into, was tied into how the camp grew. And since then, it's continued to grow. Now there are any number of tribes, other tribes that have come to join the camp. I think at last count there were probably over 280 different tribes that were represented, and it's just an ongoing effort to draw attention to the fact that this pipeline threatens not only tribal water and the right to human right to clean water that all of us as human beings have, but also the tribe's cultural resources. This is a very sacred area for them.
Right.
There are a lot of burial sites through there. There are a lot of Sundance sites. It's tremendous, cultural and archaeological resources there that construction is going right through.
Wow. And of course, it could impact Kansas City, because we're downstream of that if it was really bad, right?
Well, theoretically. Although, it's far enough north to where if you did have a major spill, downstream communities would certainly be affected. By the time the oil settles out and its constituent components, dissolve or dissipated, it's really hard to say whether or not, KC's water would be directly affected. But the reality is don't want any water resources in an area that, such as the Missouri River, contaminated. Way too many people rely on the river for irrigation, for crops, for agriculture, and for drinking water. And, the rivers, the river's a precious ecosystem. We need to do a much, much better job of protecting it.
Right. Yeah. Well put. And so just to bring us up to the present tense, so tell us what happened like the Friday before Labor Day weekend, and then what happened over Labor Day weekend.
That was quite the event. What led up to it was the Standing Rock tribe had filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, challenging the permitting of the pipeline being able to run underneath the Missouri just by their reservation. And there was one other tribe actually intervened in that case as well. The Cheyenne River Sioux tribe also was granted leave by the court to intervene. And they had a hearing that was coming up on a motion for a preliminary injunction, which would have stopped the permitting process or would have stopped the construction of the pipeline underneath the river. That lawsuit was brought on a couple of different grounds. One was under the National Historic Preservation Act, which Section 106 of that act requires consultation with the tribes prior to any activities that might wind up affecting the cultural or historic resources. And there's a big argument. In fact, the tribes, will tell you that they were not consulted in any kind of a meaningful way. Then you also had the actual permitting process itself that the Corps of Engineers undertook. They used this expedited process called Nationwide Permit Number 12, which is a way that they use to sort of streamline the approval process of infrastructure projects that are on Corps of Engineers property without having to go through a more full and rigorous process. So in this case, typically if you have a project that's going to affect water, for instance, you've got to do an environmental assessment under the National Environmental Policy Act. The Corps did a very cursory environmental assessment and then issued a finding of no significant impact, which essentially got them out from having to do a much more rigorous and thorough environmental impact statement. Which really should be done on any project of this size and scope.
Yeah.
But, the tribe's contention was that the Corps kind of gamed this nationwide permitting system to look at the pipeline in very tiny slices along its entire route instead of assessing the impact of the pipeline as a whole. And that's one of the key contentions that's being argued about. But anyway, they'd asked the court for a preliminary injunction. That Friday before the Labor Day holiday weekend, the judge denied their request for a preliminary injunction. That was last Friday. But the Friday before the Labor Day holiday weekend, let me jump back to that. To bolster their arguments about the cultural resources aspects of the pipeline route, the tribe had one of their archaeologists go at the invitation of the landowner who this pipeline was, whose pipeline route was across, to actually go and take a look to see what was there. The Corps of Engineers relied on a survey of archaeological and historic sites that had been provided by the pipeline company itself.
Wow.
Which, of course, said, nothing to see here, move right along, no problem. Well, the tribe's archaeologist took a look at it and said, wow, there are some phenomenal sites here, including some sites that are so significant, you're hardly ever going to find anything like this, or nothing like this has really been recorded in North America. I mean, very significant sites, including potential burial sites. He filed a declaration identifying all of this in court the Friday before the holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The very next day, Saturday on the holiday weekend, the pipeline company moved its bulldozers ahead and then bulldozed those specific sites and areas that had been disclosed in court the prior day.
So it just
looks to me like it was objectively, it looks like it was the deliberate destruction of those resources. And of course, when people at the site, at the camp saw that was happening, it led to the confrontation that Amy Goodman documented, for Democracy Now, where you had, you know, private security contractors that had been, were working for the pipeline company, were there with dogs. They unleashed the dogs. People were injured. A number of individuals trying to stop the bulldozers were bitten by dogs. You know, people were pepper sprayed. It was, you know, it was a pretty ugly scene. I don't think, you know, we've seen images like that, you know, since maybe the photographs coming out of the civil rights era, with the, you know, with the police using dogs on protesters. It was pretty stunning.
Right. Do you think that elevated the, like, you put it higher on Obama's priority list, for example? Do you think that, you know, that,
you know, I don't know what he's thinking, but I mean, how could it not?
How
could it not? With those images, you know, going out all over the world, it really, I think it really just highlighted the issues and, you know, the treatment that, that Native American communities have received at the hands of our government and the hands of, you know, of private companies over the years. I mean, it was a very, very stark image.
We're gonna take a quick break. We'll be back, and we're gonna talk to Arlene Taylor and Jane Carroll. But Robin, I don't want you to go away because we're gonna want to bring you back. And if anyone's interested in joining the conversation themselves, 816-931-5534 is that number. We'll be back.
Cue the creepy music. There's a villain on the move on this current cast. Imagine 40-pound fish invading a lake and stealing food from smaller species. It sounds like a horror movie, but Asian carp are real, and breeding populations are found in rivers near the Great Lakes. Christy Meyer of the Ohio Environmental Council says the situation's scary for her state, in part because Lake Erie is known for fishing.
Lake Erie in Ohio generates a $12.9 billion revenue for the state of Ohio in tourism and travel, supports over 119,000 jobs. So all of that's at stake if Asian carp were to get into Lake Erie.
She says prevention means assessing and possibly cutting off entry points throughout the ecosystem. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
You're either living with your parents or you're married.
An Orthodox enclave, a polygamous sect, a coven of witches.
You know, it was some guy trying to get me to walk on hot coals so that I could, you know, prepare myself for the UFO landing.
We speak with three people who escaped. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon.
KKFI has been covering the Dakota Access Pipeline, Standing Rock story for weeks. But for months, a very similar struggle has been fought and continues to be fought by landowners and activists in Iowa affected by the same pipeline. The next edition of Sprouts will tell that story Thursday at noon.
All right, welcome back to Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And Robin's been kind of bringing us up to speed. We've got to some more up-to-speed necessary to bring us up to the complete present. But before we get to that, I want to bring in the two women here, Arlene and Jane. Now, Arlene, I was sitting here just thinking, like, it was less than a week ago that I met you. It was last Tuesday. And you came into the station and said, we're going up to bring supplies to the encampment. And asked us to make a few announcements, and we obliged. And you got quite a bit of supplies. So
I got a tremendous response, and it had to do with your phone calls. And I want to thank all the people that contributed in Brookside and in Westport. I filled my car in a day, and we got out of town, and we left town Wednesday.
Wow.
So,
and it was Tuesday that you came by, right?
Yeah.
And so, but what inspired you to come here? Like, what is, or you know, the broader question really is, what inspired you to make the journey?
A lot of things have spoken to me, and I've sort of become an activist. And an activist means taking actions. It means being involved. And I saw all this stuff on Facebook and started reading, and it just seemed like, you know, those Indians are up there in South Dakota. There's nothing up there. There's very few people. And a little bit makes a big impact, and I wanted to see the land, and I wanted to bring them whatever assistance or help I could. I wouldn't go without somebody else, and I was so fortunate to have this friend of mine, Jane Carroll, who said that she would come.
That's terrific.
I had been getting my news off of the internet, especially Facebook, for quite some time now. The media at large is not to be trusted. And I saw that video of the dogs and the mace or the pepper spray, and I was disturbed, and I was so grateful. Arlene was already on. She was mobilizing. She was wanting to go out there, and we did it very rapidly in just a couple of days' time. We just I got donations from Unity Village, Blue Springs, and Harrisonville, so we had a nice reach.
That's great. So how long did it take you to get up there from here? How long is the journey from?
It was about 10 hours to Pierre. I had looked on the internet enough to know
10 hours.
That we would be blocked if we went to Bismarck and came in from the north. So we instead decided to take a bunch of state roads and then roads on the Indian reservation in order to get there and drive up from the back side.
And what was it like when you...
What
but did you
land.
Have any issues along the way there, getting there?
Oh, I feel like our trip was really blessed by this powers that be. Everything went very smoothly.
So what?
Yes.
What? Tell us about what you saw when you arrived and how.
Well,
a huge encampment in a beautiful place with infinite sky and clouds, and it was totally different than anything. It was like I went to a new country, to be honest. Not like Missouri. And a sea of cars and tents there along the lake. And among the things that we did while we were there, besides unload our cargo, was attend a ritual with the different tribes coming down and their canoes, and we blessed them.
Very nice. And so did you showed up and you said, we've got some stuff, where do we take it? And
sure.
And how did that go?
And we were driving along this plains, and I hadn't seen anything that looked like an encampment. And but we get to the town of supposedly Cannonball, and it was really a derelict kind of a odd building on the corner. And there happened to be a guy sitting in an old car there and hanging out. And I pulled up and got out and talked to him. And it turned out we were only like maybe 100 yards from this drop that went down to the bridge over the Cannonball where these two campgrounds were. So he gave me directions on how to enter. And we left our goods at the first camp, which was the Stone Spirit Camp. And then we went across to the larger camp, the Red Warrior Camp, which has this beautiful entrance of flags of each of the tribes that have come. There must be over 100, you said 230. There were 230 flags going down this gravel road into the encampment. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. And at the powwow we went to, at the chanting, it was amazing to me because I suddenly realized that I was standing on almost this softness mat, and it was really grasses. It must have been 3 or 4 inches thick of grasses that had stomped down and become this giant mat where this encampment, where this campground was and or is. I met several people while I was there. I met the gentleman that guided us in, and then he showed up again later on. And then I was so fortunate to run into a lady named Chant, who was about my age. She was a storyteller. She said that she had spent the last 3 or 4 months working with the children, telling stories. And she talked a lot about the conflict, how they need money for their legal defense, how this isn't just going to go away.
Hmm. Yeah. the most important need that's still looming is money for the legal help. But they had, you know, a need for blankets and tent equipment and towels and
sleeping
medical
bags.
Supplies and things like that, the first aid kinds of things.
What kind of legal help are they? I mean, it's not like there's a lot of people have been arrested. Is it more like, you know, filing motions in court? Is that kind of thing, Ron?
Yeah. It's
Well, it's the arrests have not really ramped up yet, but I think there is a tremendous anticipation that may indeed occur. If the Corps of Engineers and the federal government, you know, decide that they're not going to back off. Because the tribes are clearly, you know, in this for the long haul. And, you know, there have already been a number of people who have been arrested, you know, including Amy Goodman.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks, were needing funds for bail. We're also, you know, having some money that, you know, that is needed to help with investigation and, you know, defense. Although there are a lot of volunteer attorneys who have been stepping up. That's been one of the things that we've been coordinating, you know, through the National Lawyers Guild has been having a legal team there on the ground at the camp to help advise folks about their ability to protest and what rights they have to engage in, you know, protected First Amendment expression of protest. And so that's been, you know, that's been a fairly large effort, has been having, you know, people on the ground there working to help and advise protesters. But there are a number of other, you know, lawyers that are engaged in this process as well. The Standing Rock tribe itself is actually being represented in the federal court in D.C. by Earth Justice, which is a public interest law firm that was, I believe, hived off from the Sierra Club a number of years ago. Some of the other tribes that have joined in this effort, like the Cheyenne River Tribe, has its own, you know, private law firm that's representing it. There was another lawsuit just filed last week by the Yankton Sioux Tribe that's, you know, also has their own counsel. There was another lawsuit that was filed actually by the pipeline company seeking to enjoin people from protesting.
Wow.
They filed a lawsuit against the Standing Rock's tribal chairman, as well as one of the members of the tribal council, and then a number of other individuals. And, you know, that lawsuit is obviously has to be defended. Luckily, the tribal chairman and his tribal council member are being represented by actually the former U.S. attorney from North Dakota. And some of the other folks that were also named in that lawsuit are being represented by the ACLU. And also, we've had some lawyers from the National Lawyers Guild step up as well. So it's a pretty broad-ranging effort.
Yeah, it sounds like a national, state, yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of different, you know, there are a lot of different threads to this and a lot of different aspects. But yes, it's taking a tremendous amount of resources. And that's, I think, to be expected anytime, you know, you're fighting a, you know, $3.8 billion project
yes.
in a fossil fuel company that's backed by, you know, all the scions of America's banking establishments.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So how long were you folks, how long did you stay there?
We just stayed there the afternoon.
Wow.
I was concerned. I didn't know what it would be like when we got there after seeing the dogs and all of that.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get in a situation where we were inside and there was a police line all the way around the encampment. I didn't know. And when we got there, it was much more calm than that. It was focused and organized. I saw no police or National Guard at the Sitting Bull Lance encampment.
We were welcome to stay. We could have brought our tents and sleeping bags, but we didn't have any space left in our vehicle.
Right.
Yeah, we threw them out at the last minute.
Really? Wow. So you stayed a few hours, drove up there, stayed a few hours, and turned around and went back.
That's essentially it.
And did you meet any checkpoints on the way back? Were there any issues going on?
No. It was about 60 to 70 miles up a very poorly maintained state road. And It was beautiful. There were no fences. There was no aberrant commercial, nitrogen-based agriculture.
There were
some fields, but
yeah,
they were.
It really did seem like the space where you would expect bison or buffalo everywhere. It was open, so open, and the sky was huge. I can't remember watching so many clouds, and that took occupied our time tremendously, is watching the sky.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it was vast.
All right, I think we'll take our second break now, and if anyone has any questions for Arlene or Jane or Robin, we're talking about the Dakota Access Pipeline. The number to call is 816-931-5534.
Hi, I'm Diana.
And I'm Colin.
And we're the underwriting representatives for KKFI.
Do you have an event that needs promotion?
A business that needs that extra push? Then we're here to help.
Custom underwriting packages are now available for 2016 to help suit your needs.
To identify your business, product, or service as supporting the Kansas City community, we're the team for you.
For Missouri inquiries, contact Colin at kkfi.org.
For Kansas inquiries, contact Diana at kkfi.org.
More information is available at kkfi.org/underwriters.
Missed last week's Echo Radio KC? No worries. You can listen online at kkfi.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Delicate chords echo from towering glacier walls. A steely sea churns against jagged chunks of floating ice. And bobbing on a platform in the frigid water, pianist Ludovico Einaudi plays a foreboding melody. Einaudi wrote his piece, Elegy for the Arctic, as a call to action, and Greenpeace arranged for a videotaped performance in front of a melting glacier in Svalbard, Norway. The goal was to raise awareness of the need to protect the rapidly changing Arctic.
The ice is constantly moving and creating. Every hour there is a different landscape. Walls of ice fall down into the water and they create big waves.
As ice from the melting glacier crashes down behind Einaudi, his performance mournfully reminds us of the impacts of global warming. At times dark and intense, the melody tapers off with a delicateness that seems to suggest it's both time to grieve for what is lost and fix what we still can. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Back here in the studio, Eco Radio KC here on 90.1 FM. Mike Murphy here. So, Robin, you brought us up to speed as to like Labor Day weekend and the dogs and all that. But then, like, the court came down on, was it Friday?
Yeah.
This past Friday?
It was last Friday. That was, it was a real disappointment the way the judge ruled. A lot of us were hoping that he would go ahead and grant a preliminary injunction, but he didn't. It's a fairly lengthy opinion that he issued, 50 some pages long.
Wow.
But ultimately did not really get into a lot of the issues that that we thought that he should have.
Right.
That of course his denial of the preliminary injunction was of course immediately appealed. Both the Standing Rock Tribe and the Cheyenne River Tribe have filed appeals promptly. But what I think was really stunning and I think took a lot of us by surprise was almost within an hour of the judge denying the motion for a preliminary injunction, you had a joint statement that was then issued by the Department of Justice, the Department of the Interior, and the Department of the Army, essentially stating that they would not permit any additional construction to occur on the Army Corps of Engineers-controlled ground, which is, of course, right along the Missouri River, until they had engaged in a further review of the actual permits and the permitting process. And I think there was an acknowledgement by them that that there were serious deficiencies in the manner in which the Corps of Engineers consulted with the tribes, prior to issuing those permits. Of course, it's going to be, the big question right now is what is the scope of this review going to be? And that's something that I know a lot of us are going to be watching very carefully, because they did seem to hint at the fact that they needed to really revise the manner in which the tribes were being engaged with by the federal government when it came to these types of permitting decisions. And that actually raises another sort of interesting question. You know, the way the current laws that are being cited, particularly the National Historic Preservation Act and the permitting processes, they all rely on this concept of consent or of just consultation with the tribes. One of the arguments that we're actually starting to push is that the tribes are sovereign nations. The relationship between them and the federal government is on a state-to-state or government-to-government level. And there are various treaty obligations that come into play. And with those treaty obligations, and you look at things like the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and a lot of the other sort of conventions that the United States is either bound by or is signed on to, it not only requires consultation, but it requires the free, prior, informed consent. And that's a big difference between that and just simply, simple consultation.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so, one of the key things we're going to be watching is are they actually moving towards that model or that type of a standard? And, of course, there's going to be a tremendous amount of pushback from the large fossil fuel companies who, their representatives are already coming out and saying, oh my God, hair fire, the sky is falling. It's going to stop every energy project we have. Well,
That's up to them.
there are other ways, of developing energy. Frankly, they ought to be taking some of that money and spending it on development of clean, renewable energy as opposed to more fossil fuels.
But absolutely.
Batteries.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
So, how long do you see this? Are we going to be talking about this a year from now, regardless of how it plays out?
That's an open question. The DOJ did say that everybody, including the pipeline company, deserved a swift resolution of this process. What that means really remains to be seen. I don't think anybody knows at this point, because this announcement just occurred last Friday, and we don't know what processes are going to be put in place yet or what kind of a timeline the federal government has in mind for a review of this permitting process.
Well, we all need to not drop the ball and keep watching this.
So speaking of which, do you folks have any plans of doing this again, or have you thought about that at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're watching. Oh, yeah. We're listening.
If there's another call for more goods, we can find them here in Kansas City and take them up there again.
So basically, you brought up stuff like camping equipment.
Yeah,
and
brought
towels.
Up some down sleeping bags. A nice lady in Brookside gave us 4 tents, I think, and we had 3 or 4 tarps and lots of towels.
That's terrific. And
it was packed. We could not see out the back.
We couldn't put our stuff in there, our camping gear.
My stuff was sitting underneath my legs.
Wow.
So. Yeah, it was a tight fit on the way up. But I have an efficient vehicle, and it has a 1.6 engine motor in it, and it gets very good gas mileage. So that's a, plus.
They have a different way of going about things. They're very peaceful and very spiritual, and I'm really just sending blessings, to be honest, their direction at this time. This seems like almost like the intended event for them to be all these tribes back together again and working together on this. This is significant, and this is an event that they could easily lead, and we should follow. And I'm wanting to be sure we follow.
The unification of the tribes. And that's great.
Yeah, that's great. So is this a, like,
they have no either resources.
Way. We're
building.
We're watching a movement being developed,
yes.
Right? Is that
yeah.
right? That's
yes.
not
yeah,
going to go away.
The amazing things is you. The minute you cross the Mo Bridge, which is the name of a town, and go over the Missouri, over Lake Oahe, onto Indian land, there are no services. There's no internet. There's no phone service. Very little. I didn't see much electrical poles or anything else.
Wow.
It's over. Once you're on their land, there's really no resources as far as utilities and services that here in Kansas City we take so for granted.
Okay, well, this has been a very illuminating discussion. Robin, where we go from here? What's coming up next then?
Well, of course, you know, the lawsuits are continuing.
Yeah.
You have the two separate ones that are pending, you know, in the District of Columbia, U.S. District Court. You also have the lawsuit that, Dakota Access filed against protesters that's actually unfolding in South Dakota, and they filed a virtually identical one in Iowa that's also being challenged by, I believe, some lawyers for the ACLU and we also have another National Lawyers Guild member in Iowa who's been working on that as well. And that will continue. You also have the prospect of potential, you know, arrests of additional protesters who are engaging in, you know, nonviolent resistance. The state of South Dakota has put up roadblocks on the highways from Bismarck south to the encampment areas, and you have law enforcement that's there actively taking photographs of everybody coming and going.
I heard Amy Goodman ask about facial recognition software this
morning. Yeah, that is being that's being utilized, and I think the idea is that it looks like law enforcement is trying to identify movement leaders,
right.
To target them for arrest.
Well,
and so those are the kinds of things that are, that are unfolding.
We've got a caller on the air. Okay. I want to get him on real quick. Hi, caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Bingo calling in from Brookside.
Hey, Bingo.
And just trying to reflect on this, I think you're looking at the people who managed this continent into a lush paradise and took the white European management models less than 300 years to bring it to the edge of catastrophe. And maybe if you put the descendants of Geronimo and Sitting Bull in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency, not any of this would be going on.
Yeah.
So I hope you're going to keep on talking about it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Bingo. All right. And any final words before we bring Naturally in here to do the calendar of events, folks?
I have one.
Yeah.
And what it is the storyteller I spoke with said to me, she says, I feel sorry for you all downriver of here because in a city, you're clueless. You don't know how to survive on the land. And if things really are going downhill and falling apart, you're going to be in a lot worse shape and a lot more hurt than we are up here.
And I recall seeing drones while we were at the lake. There were these bizarre little mechanical things darting around like hummingbirds. Couple of them.
Any final thoughts, Robin?
Well, this is really, I think, sparked an interesting, I think, turning point when it comes to both the relationship of our government to the Native American indigenous peoples of North America, as well as with respect to the environmental movement and how it approaches big energy projects. And it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. There are a lot of issues in play, and frankly, it's going to be a long road before we're done.
Well, thanks folks. Thanks very much for being here tonight. We're going to turn it over to Natural E for the calendar of events.